Loneliness has a long and complicated history. In the 17th century, it was the consequence of a fall from grace. In the industrial age, it became more of a secular issue, alienation, feeling lost in the crowd. In the 20th century, philosopher Hannah Arendt identified loneliness as a political tool used by totalitarian dictators like Hitler and Stalin. And today, loneliness is a public health issue. Britain, Sweden, and Japan even have state ministers of loneliness charged with doing something about it. In the U.S., Surgeon General Vivek Murthy calls it an epidemic. But political philosopher Samantha Rose Hill says we still don't get it. Loneliness, she told Steve Paulson, is not an illness caused by social isolation. It's an inescapable aspect of being human.
The experience of loneliness in these medicalized discourses is treated as something to be cured. It's treated as a public health issue, as something that's bad. Loneliness is often understood in comparison with solitude as the kind of unwanted twin.
Right. The distinction that I've often heard between loneliness and solitude is the state that people actually want. I mean, they seek out solitude as a sort of a positive way of being alone, whereas loneliness is usually described as something you don't want. You want to overcome it.
Yes, and I think that's right. And as somebody who loves solitude, I understand solitude as the experience of keeping company with myself. It's that pleasant experience of being home alone, sitting in front of a fire, reading a book, or working on something, having a conversation with yourself. You're in harmony with yourself. But loneliness is an uncomfortable experience. And it's an experience that people often want to run away from instead of face. When we experience loneliness, unlike solitude, we're confronted with ourselves. We're confronted with the fundamental questions of human life. Who am I? Why am I here? What is the meaning of life? How should I live?
In other words, if you don't really like yourself,
yes,
that's a problem.
It's a huge problem. Yes. When I imagine a kind of anonymous, lonely figure, I imagine somebody who's not very comfortable with silence, somebody who always has to be talking or keeping themselves busy so that they can avoid that confrontation with themselves.
Sam, I know you have been studying loneliness for years. You're writing a book about it. You teach a class on loneliness. Why are you so interested in this subject? Does it come out of your own life in any way?
Yes, it comes out of my own life. I'm interested in loneliness personally and politically. I came to loneliness through personal experiences. I grew up very lonely. I am a working class kid from Michigan. I'm the first person in my family to graduate from college. My first memory is of my mother threatening to kill me.
Oh my God. Wow.
I grew up with a deep sense of rootlessness. Both of my parents struggled with mental health issues and alcohol and drug addiction.
Well, and I can imagine growing up in that kind of environment, maybe the only way you could survive would be to pull back and to create an invisible wall around yourself.
That's one way to think about it. I think my imagination saved me, and so did books. I fell in love with literature at an early age. I think I started reading Nietzsche when I was about 12.
Oh my goodness.
and Shakespeare and Tennessee Williams. You know, it was really finding Tennessee Williams and his play, The Glass Menagerie, that gave me an idea of what escape could look like. And I think this is one of the wondrous and terrifying things about the experience of loneliness. It can give you the opportunity to draw your own cartography. You can make your own way. Nietzsche would have said, give style to oneself. Hmm. And that's an immense freedom. But in the words of the poet W.H. Auden, to be free is often to be lonely.
Yeah. Well, we're talking earlier about whether loneliness is always a negative conditioning, something that you want to get past. It sounds like maybe it was partly that as you were growing up, but partly something else. It was partly liberating, maybe even life-giving.
It was once I learned to embrace the experience of loneliness. When you just try to run away from loneliness, as I did for much of my life, when I was 19, I went and lived in an amusement park. I ran off with a cult for a couple of years. I've converted through several religions.
You have an interesting personal history, I have to say.
I spent the better part of my teens and 20s, I think, looking for a sense of community because I was running away from loneliness. And when I realized that I couldn't do that, that I had to stand face to face with my loneliness and accept loneliness as a comrade that would accompany me through life, then it was liberating, then it was life-giving, then I felt myself free to go out into the world as myself and explore and be curious.
You said that the other reason that you're so interested in loneliness as a subject of intellectual inquiry is the politics of it.
Yes.
I think we tend not to think of loneliness as really having a political dimension to it. So where do politics come in?
So I was drawn to the political side of loneliness through the work of Hannah Arendt, who is a 20th century political thinker that I've spent a lot of time thinking with. In 1951, she published The Origins of Totalitarianism, offering the first account of how totalitarianism had emerged in the middle of the 20th century.
And it's worth pointing out that Hannah Arendt had personal experience. She was a Jew who barely escaped Nazi Germany.
Yes. She was captured by the Gestapo in 1933 in Berlin for collecting anti-Semitic research propaganda in the Prussian State Library. She was held for about 8 days before she was released. She escaped the next morning through Czechoslovakia and made her way eventually to Paris, where she spent about 8.5 years helping Jewish youth emigrate to then Palestine. And then in 1940, she was interned in Gurs in the south of France for 5.5 weeks before she was part of a mass escape with 62 other women.
So she knew this intimately, you know, what a totalitarian government could do to people.
Absolutely. And it's worth saying she knew loneliness intimately as well. She was always an outsider, a pariah, but she was attuned to why loneliness is so powerful. And she argues that loneliness is the underlying condition of all totalitarian movements. So she describes how the experience of loneliness in the 20th century was transformed by these political regimes, Hitlerism, Stalinism, from an occasional occurrence into an experience of everyday life. And organized loneliness is a political form of loneliness that underlies totalitarian movements by destroying people's relationship to reality through political propaganda that makes it difficult to trust our own opinions, thought processes, and sense perceptions of reality.
So instead, you trust what the political leaders are telling you. What they're saying is what's happening in your life.
Precisely. And in that way, she understood this political form of organized loneliness to be characterized by cynicism that leads people down rabbit holes of thought, always thinking the worst while convincing them that there is always a true reality beyond the common reality of everyday life that we share. You destroy their relationship with themselves, which isolates them, cuts them off, that makes people hungry for meaning. And so then the regime creates the conditions for loneliness through political propaganda, while also then meeting that hunger for meaning by telling people how to think and who to blame.
So you're really talking about losing the ability to think for yourself.
Precisely, yes.
There's an absolutely chilling quote from Hannah Arendt's Origins of Totalitarianism, where she said, "The ideal subject of totalitarian rule is not the convinced Nazi or the convinced communist, but people for whom the distinction between fact and fiction and the distinction between true and false no longer exist." And chilling, I think, for those of us who've been living through the last few years, where, quite frankly, we've just, you know, lived through this 2020 election when Donald Trump claimed the election was stolen from him despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary.
It is the kind of thing that she was talking about. And we see this form of organized loneliness. We see this form of tyrannical and not totalitarian thinking today, not in the emergence of totalitarianism, but we see it in the emergence of populism, where the Republican Party is comfortable rejecting the facts of science in the face of a deadly pandemic, and where the President of the United States is unable to accept the reality of electoral defeat. I think we also see it in the rise of internet conspiracy theory groups like QAnon.
Now, there's one big thing that's really changed the landscape since Hannah Arendt wrote this 70 years ago, and that's the internet and social media. And now, of course, people can be sitting in their homes, maybe alone physically, but hyper-connected to all kinds of people and probably people who share similar political opinions. How does that figure into this whole discussion of loneliness?
Well, I think it presents us with an interesting paradox of loneliness, because on the one hand, we've become more social today, but we've also become more isolated. And a lot of the socializing we do is alone in front of our screens. And loneliness is felt most sharply in the company of others. So the more social we are, the more lonely we're going to feel.
That is a paradox. I mean, that sounds pretty counterintuitive.
Yes. It is a paradox, but loneliness is about the social relationships that we have. And it does mean that people who are more social probably feel loneliness more often than people who are introverts or inclined to solitude.
Really? That's fascinating. I would not have guessed that.
Well, I think one of the difficulties that we're facing today is that even when people are alone with themselves, they're never really alone. We always have a device, usually within arm's reach, which means that even if we're not connected to the internet, to email, to social media, that the possibility of that connection is always at the ready. And just that does something to the space of solitude that's necessary for thinking. And so then most of the time we spend on social media or the internet is spent affirming what it is we already think, which has the effect of narrowing the imagination and making the world a smaller place. So we become less empathetic.
So what can we do to be less lonely, or at least less lonely in the negative sense?
I think that we need to rephrase that question. It's not about being less lonely. The first thing that we have to do is change the way that we're talking about loneliness. Loneliness is a part of the human condition. Loneliness is not going away. We cannot cure loneliness. And when we experience loneliness, I think that we can learn to reascribe meaning to what is happening to us. And there has to be a way to reimagine the way that we're talking about loneliness today and how the experience of loneliness has changed in the 21st century.
That's Samantha Rose Hill talking with Steve Paulson. She's a political philosopher at Bard College and author of a new biography of Hannah Arendt.